Now, would you please join me for the scripture lesson found in your pew Bible, starting at the bottom of page 151. It's Romans chapter 12, verses 9 through 21. Let love be genuine. Hate what is evil. Hold fast to what is good, and love one another with mutual affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not lag in zeal. Be ardent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in suffering. Persevere in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints. Extend hospitality to strangers. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Do not claim to be wiser than you are. Do not repay anyone evil for evil, but take thought for what is noble in the sight of all. If it is possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave room for the wrath of God. For it is written, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay," says the Lord. No, if your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they are thirsty, give them something to drink. For by doing this, you will heap burning coals on their heads. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
This is a gospel lesson. If you, it is your tradition to stand, I ask you to do so. This is Luke 14, 25. Now large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and he turned and said to them, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself, cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not first sit down and estimate the cost to see whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it will begin to ridicule him, saying, 'This fellow began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king, going out to wage war against another king, will not sit down first and consider whether he is able, with 2,000, to oppose the one who comes against him with 20,000. If he cannot, then, while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for the terms of peace. So therefore, none of you can become my disciple if you do not give up your possessions." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. We are putting together the bulletin, and Paya and I and doing things, And that symbol was on the bulletin originally. And I said to Paya, I said, "Wait a minute, I have another idea." And I changed it. And on the front of your bulletin, you can see the different, see that iconic picture. Do you remember that picture? I understand now that a legend or a mystery has turned up about that flag. It was, they found it on board a ship in the harbor, or a boat or something, a yacht. And they brought it and erected it at Ground Zero. And then it disappeared for some time. And then they refound it, but they don't know the whole story there. So it's fascinating and exciting and fun to think about what might be the story of that flag. But as I put the bulletin together and I looked at the cover, I thought, I'm not sure I can put all of those together on the same cover. It seemed incongruous. Here's the picture of the firefighters with a flag at Ground Zero. And the word hate, it just struck me. 9/11 is one of those milestone communal memories. How many of you remember where you were on that morning, what we were doing? I think everyone here is old enough, except maybe Mark Doctor. He may be too young. How many of you remember where you were when you heard about John F. Kennedy? How many of you remember where you were when you heard about Pearl Harbor? Now we're beginning to date ourselves, I warn you. How many of you remember where you were when you heard about the Titanic sinking? Yeah, I pushed... You what? You were out Fort Sumter. Yeah, thanks a lot, Rich. Pushing the limits a long ways on that one, but... Those communal memories, and our... We have a generation, 15 years now, we have babies that were born afterwards that are in high school now that did not experience that. And that's all right, but they have grown up with that as a part of their reality. How many of you remember? I remember being a little lad, and Dad had to fly out of Stapleton International Airport, and he was flying to New Jersey. And so we went and brought him to the airport, and we walked out, and I could have walked up and patted the tires on the airplane, and we stood at the stairwell with him and shook hands and kissed, and people going up and down the stairs. And today, you'd be on the tarmac spread-eagled. Life has changed so much. And what happened there has changed us. Think about the emotions. Can you remember back to the emotions of that morning? I was in my study, and I was busy on the computer. I hadn't turned on the news or anything. Paula is an early bird, or at least she was before she retired, and she was getting up for school, and she called me and said, turn on the news, turn on, a plane has impacted a tower in New York. And I am pictured a small private plane, a Cessna, that had bumped into the building. Did you know that a bomber flew into the side of the Empire State Building at some point around World War II? That was my envisionment. And as I heard the news beginning to escalate about this airplane crash, I thought, that's called denial. That's called, it can't be true. It can't really be happening. And how many of us felt that until we began to see what was occurring? And then we saw the second airplane hit the second tower. I was in the middle of an interview. I was interviewing a Marine who was to become the police chief in Milliken, Colorado. And he was normally stationed in the Pentagon. And he was in Milliken, Colorado, being interviewed instead. That always haunts me. And it haunts him. But we remember suddenly realizing what had occurred. And I don't know about you, but there was grief. And a piece of me kept jumping out and being rage and anger. You see, grief is an interesting emotion. You can't walk around in society easily experiencing and demonstrating grief. It's much more acceptable to demonstrate anger and rage and all of those. And those are substitute emotions for that real feeling of grief and sadness. It's interesting how our society does that and how it changes us. But then I remember hearing the different stories and the different reactions and calls to find whoever did this and bomb them back into the Stone Age. And then somebody pointed out they wouldn't know the difference. They're already in the Stone Age. They are so impoverished, some of the people in Afghanistan and Iraq. It was hard to be Christian for a while there, wasn't it? You see, our DNA, the United Methodist DNA is similar to a lot of Protestant DNA. Ours is a little different, but we are Christian DNA says that we know what God said. He said, vengeance is mine. You cannot take revenge. Revenge is unacceptable, period. That's what we heard Holly read out of the letter to Romans. Do not avenge yourself. Leave room for, I will handle that part. It has to do with judging, ultimately, doesn't it? It has to do with us deciding and then seeking revenge. God will handle that piece. And so standing there and being that was a struggle for a while. What are your reactions today when you see some of the moving tributes at Ground Zero? The memorial looks overwhelming. The towers of light, the pillars of light, the names of those lost. And it looks like they have done a wonderful job of memorializing that and celebrating their lives. 300 and something firefighters. Do we remember the number? It was incredible. And today, I saw in the news last night, they have those stair runs where they carry the firefighters' gear and they run up the stairs equal to the 130 flights. What is it? Any of you know what it is? They have these marathons, if you will. When I run up one flight of stairs, I think about that. 110, is that what it was? Thank you. Think about that, and I remember that. And that's become a positive thing. I saw people, they're running at Red Rocks, and they were running down and around and up and down and around and up. 9 laps. And it was a celebration. There were kids running, there were adults running, and it was good and healthy. And I thought, something good has come out of that. And that's wonderful. And remembering those, especially the firefighters, the law enforcement people, the emergency workers that were killed, not to mention all of the innocents who were in the towers. Paula's daughter Trista was named after a woman named Trista who was in the towers when they were hit. She got out. She's now struggling with cancer, and there's a huge debate whether or not she was exposed to some things, but we don't know. But to know such close connections brings it home and makes it so much more real what happened there. To remember that and to remember, I remember a nation unified, voices all together, and we were resolved and we were together. Hate. There was hate in the midst of, and there was some heat in that mixture of emotions. But hate is not who and what we are. It is contrary to how we stand as Christians, and it's a struggle. You remember in Luke 6, Jesus said, "Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you." We hear that. It isn't just Luke. It's in so many places, and it is epitomized as Paul learned that and understood that. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. But you know what? The hardest thing in the world is loving my enemies. How about you? Those who injure us, how do we respond as Christ would have us? It's the most difficult thing I know. But it's what we're called to. But this morning's passage is an entirely different one out of Luke 14, the cost of discipleship. Jesus said, and listen to his words, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself, cannot be my disciple." I read that and I just cringe. If you don't hate your families, you can't be a disciple. It just doesn't work for me. And I've studied that and studied that, and finally I had enough background and ability that I realized that it was a translational problem. You see, the Jewish word, I don't know what it is, the Hebrew, it is translated as the English word hate. But in the original language, it might mean detach or turn away from. For me, that's a huge difference. Hating is one thing. Turning away from is something else. So I can hear that now. Whoever does not turn away from father and mother or wife and children, brother and sister, and even life itself cannot be my disciple. Now I can hear something different. It's still difficult to hear. Have any of you ever heard of the Ten Commandments? It's not a trick question. One of them says, "You shall honor your mother and your father." And this one doesn't really say that. What he says, if you don't hate or turn away from your mother and father, you can't be my disciple. It seems like they're opposites. But we need to understand the time as well. In that day and age, the Jewish tradition was how many hundreds of generations old? And the traditions of the temple with the Pharisees and the Sadducees, the chief priests, all of that tradition was static and set. And Jesus comes in and he's upsetting this. He's turning this over. In fact, he's criticizing the Sadducees and Pharisees. And so if you're sitting around the family dinner, sitting around the table watching the 5 o'clock news, and you're discussing religion, can you imagine the struggle? Tradition, we must stay with tradition. And Jesus is saying that's tradition. There are problems here that have got to change. And understanding that you can't keep your feet locked in those traditions and still be an honest disciple of Christ. He's naming that. You must detach from that. This is not about banding family or, but it's this graphic statement to make a graphic statement to us. I'm reminded of the Civil War, the struggle between, in a household it must have been awful, that some believing in slavery, some opposing slavery, in the same households. Can you imagine how awful that division, that pain, that struggle must have been? We have those struggles today over different issues. My mom and dad are both passed. They passed in 2013. But I could count on one thing for many years of my adult life. No matter which way my dad decided to vote, my mother would vote the other way. Dad wouldn't tell her. He would wait, and he would hold out and not say anything and wait till she talked herself one way or other. But invariably she'd find out, and then he'd vote one way, and she'd cancel him out. My mother was 4'11 and 3/4, and she was just a rascal. But those divisions, we can laugh about them in that context, but they become a little harder sometimes in real life. Within families, divisions about issues. But Jesus is very clear about one thing. As a disciple, there's only one way to be. This commitment that he's calling for, it's not an easy one. It's a huge commitment. It's a commitment I have seen. Have any of you seen persons who swear their allegiance to the United States, who come and immigrate into the United States and swear their allegiance to the United States? Have anybody, now I know Paula has, anybody else been in the courtroom with a federal judge and you stand and swear? Maybe you've seen it on TV. And do they do the Pledge of Allegiance too, Paula? It's been a few years. Both of her children were naturalized. And we celebrate that, but one of the things that they require when you become a citizen of the United States of America is that you give up any allegiance to any previous place. Maybe you came from Canada, England, the United Kingdom, France, Spain, Germany, Austria, Russia, Mexico, El Salvador, any of those places. You must put them, your allegiance to them behind you, and declare your allegiance to the United States, and you swear that. Jesus is demanding that same commitment, that same allegiance, disconnecting us from anything that is contrary to following him. I remember in college, it was graphic to me. I quit college after a couple of years. I needed the break, and I was fed up with, and you know how that happens sometimes. I joined a construction crew, and I was started out on the bottom of the totem pole as a laborer, became a carpenter, working my way up. But as you join a group like that, you want to become a part of the group. And there was a construction crew. There were 6 or 8 of us that worked together, and you want to be a part of and belong. And I had to earn my way by going and getting the left-handed screwdriver and going and, you know, and learning my way and building my way and gradually becoming a part of that group and being accepted by them. There was a couple of guys in the group that were overtly racist. And I didn't agree with them. But it's a struggle because you want to belong, so you don't want to upset the apple cart and argue against them even though you don't agree. All these years later now, I think back about some of the other people in that group, and I would think that all of us disagreed with those two. But nobody wanted to say anything. And sometimes just being able to say, I'm not sure we all agree with you, helps everyone realize that they have voice and that we can't just calmly go along with things we disagree with. Christ is calling us against that allegiance too. Allegiance to groups, to political groups, to peer groups, to social groups, to any group that you belong to might have some sets of values, and where they come in conflict with Christ, we as Christians are called to a very clear commitment. We are called to loyalty to Christ. Whoever comes to me and does not turn away from all others, even your families, cannot be my disciples. Fred Craddock, my favorite preacher, he said it this way. What Jesus is calling for is that those who follow him understand that loyalty to him can and will create tension within the self and between oneself and those one loves. And in such conflicts of loyalty, he requires our primary allegiance. It's a powerful passage. Whoever does not deny mother and father, brother, sister, son, families, other groups, and follow me is not my disciple. It calls us to an amazing place. But it's a place of life and celebration and liberty. It is a place that could be this place. The firefighters establishing and pulling the flag up on a flagpole, celebrating the United States, but also celebrating unity, resolve, those are okay, but not hate. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Amen.